After many years spent on death row, inmates often have different mindsets and even mixed feelings about their final hours. However, when the end comes, most people tend to turn to God and their religions. They offer last-minute prayers, some in the hope of last-minute miracles and others simply seeking solace. In today's video, I will reveal the most disturbing last prayers of death row inmates. Ian Warnos. As her end approached, American serial killer Ian Warnos, known for her candor, began to open up more and give interviews. In some interviews, she was able to speak and communicate her thoughts, but at other times she would end up spouting an incoherent string of words. In the last minutes of his existence, Warnos had the opportunity to utter what would be his last words, and he said, "Yeah, I'd just like to say that I'm sailing with the Rock and I'll be back like Independence Day, with Jesus, June 6th, like in the movie, the big mothership and all that. I'll be back, I'll be back." While some believe this was just another one of her rambling statements, others believe that embedded in that statement was Warnos' final prayer for another chance at life. After 10 years on death row, Warnos was executed by lethal injection in October 2009 for killing a total of 7 men between 1989 and 1990. While on death row, Warnos attempted to speed up her execution by battling her attorneys who believed she was mentally unstable. In 2001, Warnos petitioned the Florida Supreme Court to dismiss all of her pending appeals, admitted her crimes, and boldly declared that she would kill again if given the chance. She was essentially asking for her execution because she was tired of her life on death row. In 2002, Warnos devised a new medium to get her message across to anyone who would listen. She began accusing prison matrons of serving her purposely fed food contaminated with saliva, urine, and dirt. She also claimed that the matrons did these things to force her to commit suicide before her execution. While these claims could have been true, they could also have been a tactic used by Warnos to reveal that she was tired of living in prison or a product of her mental illness. Warnos had a hard time in life and began committing crimes at a very young age. By the age of 11, she was selling her body for drugs, food, and cigarettes. At the age of 14, she was raped and impregnated by a family friend. From that point on, Warnos' life spiraled downward and she eventually became a hitchhiking sex worker. She was arrested multiple times for various reasons in different states and had a long criminal record that included crimes such as armed robbery, car theft, forgery, and possession of weapons. In 1989, Warnos went a step further and added murder to her long list of crimes. All of her victims were men between the ages of 40 and 65 who were her clients. At first, Warnos claimed that she killed the men in self-defense because they had raped or attempted to rape her. However, her story had several holes, so instead of getting a lenient sentence for self-defense, she was sentenced to death for 6 of the 7 murders she committed. Although Warnos had a rough childhood and lived a life of crime, her end was very different. A few weeks before her execution, Warnos gave interviews in which she spoke of God and Jesus and being taken to the afterlife. For her last meal, Warnos ordered only a cup of coffee. She was the second woman executed in Florida and the 10th in the United States after capital punishment was reinstated in 1976. Her body was cremated and her ashes scattered under a tree by her childhood friend. John Henry Ramirez. At first glance, John Henry Ramirez's last prayer does not seem out of the ordinary. However, the fact that he prayed it with Dan, Ramirez's spiritual advisor in the execution chamber, marked the difference. In the last moments of Ramirez's life, the pastor of the Baptist Church said, "Look upon John with your grace. Grant him peace. Grant us all peace." To which Ramirez responded with an amen. As simple as the act itself may seem, it was illegal in Texas prisons for death row inmates' spiritual advisors to touch them and pray aloud during executions, until just before Ramirez's execution. In the final weeks of his life, John Henry Ramirez channeled his energy into fighting what he saw as a violation of his religious freedom. when he realized that his spiritual advisor would not be allowed to pray with him during his execution, Ramirez decided to take on the government in an attempt to change the statute. At first, the Texas government denied his requests, but rather than give up, Ramirez filed a religious freedom lawsuit that eventually made its way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Ramirez's request was ultimately granted, marking a victory not only for him but for all other death row inmates who want their spiritual advisors to be with them in their final moments. Ramirez was executed in October 2022 by lethal injection for killing a store clerk in 2004. On the night of the incident, he was high on a mixture of alcohol, cocaine, and Xanax. In an intoxicated state, he decided to rob a nearby store. Pablo Castro, a store employee, was taking out the trash when he became Ramirez's victim. Ramirez was 20 years old at the time and attacked Pablo, beating him and stabbing him over 29 times before fleeing the scene. Since it was initially a robbery, Ramirez made off with a paltry $1.25. What Ramirez didn't know that night was that Castro was a father of nine and worked hard to make ends meet. Following the incident, two young women who had assisted Ramirez in a series of robberies were arrested that same day, but Ramirez was nowhere to be found. He later fled the country and settled in Mexico, where he lived, managed to evade arrest for years. He was finally apprehended by the FBI in Brownsville, Texas, along the U.S. border. Ramirez was tried for the murder and convicted in 2008. He was sentenced to death unanimously. However, he managed to get his execution postponed three times for various reasons. The first reason was that he needed a new attorney for the case. The second delay was caused by the pandemic that made it impossible for anyone to be in the courtroom. The third delay was due to the legal battle over his religious freedoms. Ramirez was finally executed in October 2022, some 15 years after committing the crime he repented for. As his time on earth came to an end, Ramirez found faith in God and tried to live his life religiously. His newfound faith depended on the spiritual guidance of his pastor, which is why he fought tooth and nail to have his pastor be with him in his final moments. Gary Gilmore, the morning of January 17, 1997, Gary Gilmore finally got his wish. His time on death row was coming to an end. Moments before his execution, the prison's Catholic chaplain, the Reverend Thomas Meersman, administered last rites to Gilmore. When everything was in place, the prison doctor placed a black hood over Gilmore's head. At that moment, with only minutes left to live, the death row inmate uttered his final words to Meersman, "Dominus Bobiscum," which translates to, "The Lord be with you." Meersman responded, "Et cum spiritu tuo," which translates to, "and with your spirit." When given the chance to say his final words, Gilmore uttered three simple words, words that would go on to make history: "Let's do it." Gilmore's final words, "Let's do it," became the inspiration for Nike's famous slogan, "Just do it." In 2015, Nike advertising executive Dannon confirmed that the company's slogan was inspired by Gilmore. This is a famous fact, and is often considered one of the greatest of the 20th century. As you might imagine, whenever Nike's slogan is mentioned, Gary Gilmore's name comes up shortly after, as he was the one who inspired it. However, it's important to note that Gilmore's life was not one of great inspiration. Gilmore was first arrested when he was just 14 years old for taking part in a car theft. Although Gilmore was released with a warning to his father, that incident marked the beginning of his life of crime. Over the years, he became increasingly violent and was in and out of prison for taking part in numerous petty crimes. In July 1976, Gilmore robbed and murdered Max Jensen, a gas station attendant, and Benny Bushnell, a motel manager. During both robberies, the men obeyed Gilmore's instructions, but in the end, even their will to obey could not save them. For a time, it seemed that Gilmore had gotten away with his crimes, but it was only with the help of an auto repairman at a garage where he worked that Gilmore worked. Gilmore had left his car to be fixed before the second robbery, and the authorities caught him. Kilmore had been trying to hide the gun used in his operations in some bushes when it accidentally went off in his hand. Unbeknownst to him, the repairman had noticed his suspicious movements, noted his license plate number, and called the police. When Gilmore left the shop, he called his cousin Brenda to ask for painkillers and bandages for his wound. Brenda immediately called the police, who caught up with Gilmore as he tried to flee the city. During his trial, Gilmore attempted to plead insanity, but four different psychiatrists testified that he was sane and had knowledge of his actions. Although the psychiatrists deemed him sane enough to stand trial, they also discovered that Gilmore suffered from antisocial personality disorder. Gilmore was convicted of murder and sentenced to death in October 1976. At that time, there were only two methods of execution in Utah, the hanging or the firing squad. Gilmore chose the firing squad because he believed the hanging might be botched. After a series of stays of execution, Gilmore began demanding that the state execute him. He openly pleaded with the public, including the reverends who were fighting for him, to stand down. The message was clear. He had accepted his fate and was ready to die. When the state seemed to ignore him, Gilmore became agitated and attempted suicide twice, but his attempts were in vain. Finally, when execution day arrived, Gilmore seemed quite excited about dying. Prior to his execution, Gilmore had requested that his organs be donated to those in need of transplants, and after his death, his request was granted. 2 hours after his death, two people received his corneas. The corneal transplants inspired the famous song Gary Gilmore Eyes. Benjamin Cole, as Benjamin Cole lay in the execution chamber, awaiting lethal injections, opened his mouth to utter a jumble of words that sounded like religious ravings. The ravings included words such as, "Choose Jesus while you can and keep your eyes wide open. Be prepared at all times." Amidst his incoherent ramblings, Cole mumbled a short prayer asking Jesus to receive his spirit. The 57-year-old was sentenced to death by lethal injection for the murder of his 9-month-old daughter, Brianna Cole. In the execution chamber, Cole showed no signs of remorse for killing his baby, but he did make a statement in which he referenced all the people he had wronged. Cole chose to carry out the execution process alone, refusing the presence of a spiritual advisor. He also made sure none of his lawyers watched the proceedings from the witness box. He made no request for a last meal and ate the standard prison fare of vegetarian lasagna, salad with dressing, an omelet, and a packet of fruit drink. Cole spent 18 years on death row after being convicted of murdering his daughter in Dome 4. On that fateful day, Cole was engrossed in a video game when Brianna began to cry, which is not out of the ordinary for a 9-month-old baby. However, this did not stop Cole from becoming irritated by her cries and reacting in the most horrendous way. He angrily grabbed the little girl's ankles and continued to bend her legs backward until they touched her head. This cruel act severed the little girl's spinal cord and tore her ankle, causing her to bleed to death. As soon as the little girl fell silent, Cole went back to playing his video game as if nothing had happened. During the trial, his lawyers argued that Cole was schizophrenic and that his condition was due to a brain injury that developed due to the extreme abuse he suffered as a child. His attorneys did not deny that Cole had coldly murdered his daughter, but they based their arguments on the fact that he was mentally unstable at the time of the incident. Prosecutors stated that the baby had suffered multiple injuries in the past due to Cole's repeated abuse. They also noted that Cole had served time in prison for abusing another child. Cole's years on death row somewhat proved his attorney's case. The brain lesion grew in size over time, causing a noticeable deterioration in his social interaction, problem-solving skills, and overall behavior. Cole's condition worsened to the point where he ignored any form of personal hygiene, refused medical attention, began hoarding food, and barely communicated with fellow inmates or anyone else in general. Alongside Ello, attorneys for the state and members of his family believed that his mental illness was being exaggerated and that he deserved to be executed for the manner in which he killed his daughter. Cole's case was a bit controversial, as his attorneys continued to argue about his mental health, stating that he was most likely not sane enough to understand why he was being executed. One attorney stated that he had been in a state of delusion and darkness for a long time and had not been able to have meaningful interactions with his attorneys. While Cole's family was pleading for justice for little Brianna, Hyken argued that executing a mentally unstable man was not the way to go. Donald Grant, while on the execution table, was told that he had 2 minutes to say his last words, but it turned out that he had a lot to say and 2 minutes was not enough. At some point in his rambling, Grant began to say what sounded like a prayer, saying, "God, I got it, it's nothing, I got things to do, don't hesitate, don't hesitate." He then continued rambling and did not stop even when his microphone was turned off. With tears in his eyes, he said, "I'm going to go to the universe and then I'll come back. God is here. The real God." Donald Grant, 46, was executed by lethal injection in January 2022 for the murder of two women during a robbery. Shortly before his execution, Grant planned to be executed by firing squad due to fears that the lethal injection method would be botched. His fear of lethal injection was heightened when another inmate being executed appeared to be in severe pain during the procedure. Unfortunately for Grant, his request to be executed by firing squad was denied. In 2001, Grant entered the La Quinta Inn in Del City with the intention of robbing it. During the process, Grant encountered Brenda Melia and Felicia Suzette Smith and shot them both to ensure there were no witnesses. He later confessed that the women would have recognized him easily because he had attended several parties at the hotel. At the time, Grant was in dire need of $200 to post bail for his girlfriend. For someone trying to free his lover from captivity, Grant took the wrong path and ended up in the same predicament as his girlfriend, only this time he paid with his life. Grant showed no mercy to the women, as court records show that he didn't just shoot them. He stabbed them multiple times to ensure their lives were gone. When authorities gathered enough evidence, Grant was sent to trial, convicted of the murders, and sentenced to death. Like many death row inmates, Grant filed a series of motions to try to have his sentence reduced. His attorneys argued that he suffered from mental illness and had been diagnosed with schizophrenia and brain damage. His attorneys had evidence of his mental instability, as Grant was declared mentally incompetent in Dillison when he was arrested. Over the next 4 years, Grant underwent rehabilitation until he was stable enough to provide his attorneys with the information they needed to defend him. Grant had a rough childhood, and that may have been the source of his mental health issues. Many argue that in addition to his overall rough childhood, Grant's mental health issues were likely due to his mother, who was a chronic alcoholic, to the point that she wouldn't give up alcohol even when she was pregnant with Grant. Not only did she drink, but she was also a drug addict who enjoyed beating Grant and verbally abusing him. Unfortunately for Grant, he couldn't find solace in his father either, as the man was also an alcoholic who didn't shy away from abusing his son. In the end, all of Grant's appeals were denied, and he was executed after spending over a decade on death row. Mario Murphy. Mario Benjamin Murphy always took his problems lightly and remained a joker to the end. Just as he was about to release the lethal dose, Murphy said, "Today is a good day to die." He then burst out laughing. When his laughter subsided, Murphy uttered what can only be described as a satirical sentence. Quote, "I forgive you all. I hope God does too." Murphy was convicted in 1991 and executed by lethal injection in September 1997 for the contract killing of James Radcliffe, a Navy cook in Virginia Beach. In 1991, Murphy, a Mexican national, was hired by Robin Radcliffe and her lover Gary Ginojosa to kill James Radcliffe, Robin's husband. At first glance, it is easy to assume that Robin was trying to get rid of her husband so that she could be with her lover, but that was not the case. Robin stood to collect on a $100,000 life insurance policy on her husband. Murphy was one of four teenagers hired by Robin and her boyfriend to kill Radcliffe. However, Murphy played the most crucial role in the murder. He attacked Radcliffe with a steel pipe and struck him severely in the head, resulting in his death. A week after the murder, Robin married her boyfriend. Prosecutors said Murphy and two other accomplices received a $5,000 payment, but Murphy's attorney said he never collected it. All six people involved in the murder were eventually arrested and convicted, with all but Murphy receiving life sentences. Murphy, on the other hand, was sentenced to death. Murphy's case became a concern for the Mexican government, which pleaded with the U.S. government for clemency but was ignored. It became a concern when it became clear that Virginia Beach officials failed to inform the Mexican embassy about Murphy's arrest. They were supposed to do so under an international treaty known as Article 36 of the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations. Virginia Beach District Attorney Robert Humphreys testified that Murphy was not notified of his rights under the 1963 Vienna Convention. He said Murphy spoke fluent English and that officials had no idea he was a Mexican citizen. Murphy was born in Tijuana, Mexico, but spent most of his life in Virginia Beach, which is why he spoke English like an American. When questions arose as to why he was the only one sentenced to death, it was revealed that Murphy had single-handedly killed Radcliffe and that the other recruits were merely accomplices. As the execution date approached, Murphy's family camped outside the prison gate and held a candlelight vigil for him. His mother pleaded for clemency, saying they were illiterate and unaware of their rights, but it was too late to save him. One of Murphy's lawyers said he was one of 61 foreign nationals who had ended up on death row and had not been informed of their rights under international treaties. Johnny Ray Johnson. As his death approached, Johnny Ray Johnson decided it was time to pour out his heart to all who would listen. In February 2009, as he was scheduled to be executed, Johnson began his final statement by denouncing the death penalty in Texas and referring to death row as a dungeon. Addressing the handful of people present to witness the execution, he said that death row was a place filled with people with isolated hearts and repressed minds. He also said that the inmates were full of love and sought affection but were not getting it. "I am a death row inmate in Polunsky's cell. Why does my heart ache? The wall of darkness crushes me. A life without meaning is a life without purpose, no life at all. Someone cares who I am or the love that I hold in my heart." Johnson concluded his speech by saying, "See you in heaven." He then began to sing a hymn as the lethal drugs were released into his system. He continued singing until the drugs took effect and he was unconscious. For his last meal, "Johnson pity you. A large meal consisting of 2 fried chicken fillets, 20 fried shrimp, 4 fried chicken breasts, 4 fried eggs without yolks, 2 honey butter cookies, 2 large pieces of peanut brittle and 2 liters of black coffee with cream and sugar on the side." Johnson, 51, was sentenced to death for raping and murdering Lee Joe Smith in 1995. Court records show that Johnson murdered Smith when his sex for drugs deal went awry. Johnson had offered Smith crack cocaine in exchange for her having sex with him. However, after smoking the cocaine, Smith changed his mind about sleeping with Johnson. Johnson became agitated and immediately began ripping off her clothes without her consent. Smith tried to fight him off, but Johnson was stronger. He threw her to the ground and slammed her head against the curb several times. In the moments that followed, Johnson proceeded to rape her. When he was finished, he fled the scene, returning a short time later for his wallet. Upon his return, Johnson raped the helpless woman a second time before stealing her boots and leaving her to die. Smith was badly injured in the incident and choked on his own blood. Johnson later confessed to killing at least 3 women and raping more than a dozen. He was convicted of Smith's murder and sentenced to death. Johnson's record showed that he was a serial offender who had a habit of sexually assaulting women. In the years leading up to his final arrest, Johnson had been arrested a total of 21 times and was frequently in and out of Carell. On one occasion, he was convicted of aggravated assault for robbing a police officer. Rosendo Rodriguez became known as the suitcase killer due to his preferred method of disposing of his victims. Although it is not uncommon for inmates to pray just before they are executed, Rodriguez's final words were more of a biblical reference than a prayer. For those who knew the nature of his crimes and the nature of his crimes, Rodriguez's were truly disturbing. His final words were, "The state may have my body, but never my soul. I have fought a good fight, I have run a good race." He then turned to the warden and said, "I am ready to join my father." The phrase, "I have fought a good fight, I have run a good race," is a biblical reference found in 2 Timothy 4:78. Some believe the hidden meaning behind Rodriguez's statement was that he believed his criminal actions were right. As disturbing as it was, he didn't stop there. He continued to rail against the death penalty and urged people to refrain from doing business in Texas until something was done about capital punishment. Rodriguez was executed by lethal injection for the murder of 29-year-old Summer Baldwin, a prostitute he had contact with in Lubbock, Texas. After murdering Baldwin, Rodriguez stuffed her naked body into a suitcase and dumped it in a landfill, where it would never be found. Baldwin was a witness in a federal case at the time, which is why the FBI was immediately notified when she went missing. She was also about 10 weeks pregnant when Rodriguez took her own life. After Baldwin's body was discovered, a universal product code on the suitcase helped investigators link Rodriguez to the murder. He was also seen on security camera purchasing the suitcase from a store. Investigations led authorities to his hotel room, where they found a tag from the suitcase along with a used condom and Baldwin's blood, confirming that Rodriguez was indeed the killer. Rodriguez claimed that he and Baldwin had engaged in sexual intercourse, but that he was forced to strangle her when she tried to scare him off with a knife. It is possible that there was some truth to Rodriguez's claims, as pulling a knife on their clients is a common technique used by sex workers when attempting to rob unsuspecting men of their belongings. But despite this, Rodriguez had no right to kill her. Rodriguez was a Navy reservist whose criminal record was clean prior to Baldwin's murder. At first glance, it's easy to assume that a clean criminal record meant Rodriguez was a first-time offender, but he wasn't, he was simply good at hiding dead bodies. While in custody, Rodriguez confessed to the murder of 16-year-old Joanna Rogers. He had also buried her using a suitcase. He had killed and disposed of Johanna's body in 2004, but her remains weren't discovered until October 2006 after an extensive search. During his trial, five women testified against Rodriguez, claiming that he had raped them. One of them was his high school sweetheart. Prosecutors portrayed Rodriguez as someone who was really good at killing people and covering it up. Rodriguez was ultimately convicted of Summer Baldwin's murder and sentenced to death. He was executed on March 27, 2018, the day after his 38th birthday. Sometimes turning to God in prayer during their final moments of life helps death row inmates find solace. However, not all inmates share this sentiment. Check out the video below to learn more about the experiences of death row inmates. M.